Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping.
Chapter 5. So they have a routine, more or less. Mustang doesn't go around introducing Ed, but he doesn't not introduce him either. People come to him, and when, just like Corbel, they express a little too much interest, he doesn't deny them. Which fits, because it's true that the way to draw attention is to employ strenuous nonchalance in order to convey that there's absolutely nothing to see here, officer. At the same time, Ed's being taken to some pretty swanky shit, assumed to be having his tuition and rent and groceries paid too, and he is being introduced to people once they come over, so it does look like Mustang's serious about his investment. Then they run into someone Ed knows. They're out to eat with a handful of people, a couple of lobbyists, some brigadier and his wife, all around a table in one of the flowery plant restaurants with some piano player tucked up somewhere in the palm fronds, tinkling away. They'd started going out to dinner with the Corbels, which very rapidly spiraled outwards into having dinners with a fuck ton of other people. This current group is some of the industry crowd that saw what happened to Steel Corps and decided tonguing Mustang's balls would be a better success strategy. It would be kind of funny, except for how they're also treating him like a well-behaved purse dog, and the fact that the brigadier's wife very clearly wants the tonguing to be literal. And while Ed can, to an extent, sympathize, she is married and has no excuse to be mentally going at him like those killer seals that try to simultaneously eat and fuck penguins to death at the zoo. Ed can't do anything about it, because he and Mustang are not actually together, and the totality of Ed's role here is to smile like he wouldn't know a hexanitro compound from a can of hairspray. And he is resentfully glad for the increase in company, because Mustang at least unbuttons less at the collar and the tennis shorts aren't likely to make an appearance. But the acting dumb is starting to grate a little. Sure, everyone's very sweet to Ed, in a poor little three-legged puppy way. But that he doesn't like. The kindness that wouldn't ever kindle in them were it not born of condescension. And worse, pity. As if he really is just some sad little shih tzu Mustang picked off the side of the road, and not Ed goddamn Elric. The absolute stupidest shit is when they notice his leg. A tick of the eyes, a flicker of the expression. Always clearly not so much their first ever encounter with automail, as it is the fact that Mustang's little love bunny has some. A gymnast, eh? With automail, no less, the brigadier's wife says at one point, in a lull of conversation, a polite comment sent down the table, though her eyes had definitely lingered when they'd all met outside, flicking to Mustang after. Very impressive. Go Lions, Ed says in a passing approximation of Brindley. He'd be perversely pettily pleased to be the herald of the fact that Mustang's into some fucked up shit. Only, it's not like the central rumor mill isn't already full of the fact that Mustang can't get off without chanting some ethnic slurs and then tasing a goat in the balls or whatever. But watching their faces, it is just another reason, Ed realizes. Another built-in feature of his that just adds to the smokescreen. Mustang can pick a date the way other people shop for groceries. So if he's with anybody less than physically perfect, there must be an external motive. Shit, maybe this little peg-legged moron really is the heir to the Armstrong fortune. What was it Mustang said in the pool that one time? Selling lies requires commitment to the bit? It must be hard for you. What's-her-face, the lobbyist says with genuine sympathy, which makes it even more annoying. With your leg, such a demanding sport, I can't imagine. I know I certainly couldn't do it.
It's not that surprising, actually, one of the men from down the table says confidently. It takes a lot of muscle tone to maintain automail. They even have sporting tournaments in Rush Valley, I hear.
Yes, cage matches and things, another one says with disapproval. It's not enough to get a limb replaced. They've got to go and turn themselves into freaks just to win a little more from the betting table.
That's true. Paninia's a 3-time roof-running champ, and Rush Valley's a gambling town. The fight ring's known to deliver more interesting performances when someone's arm is part lawnmower. But Ed doesn't like his tone.
Oh, don't worry. I don't qualify, he says, remembering to redirect his look to his plate at the last second, so as to come across embarrassed instead of mocking. You gotta have both legs done to race. Not enough of me got chopped off.
And a good thing, too. Otherwise, I'd lose him to sport entirely. Mustang leans in, broken off from his conversation with the brigadier, brimming with the airy gregariousness he gets when he's deliberately being an asshole. Though right now, Ed's pretty sure he's just impersonating the wife. At least this way, he goes to class once in a while. He's quite the little intellectual, you know. Not that his professors agree, of course.
Ed's expression must be doing something indescribable, trying to even out the competing urges to burst out laughing or chuck something at Mustang's head, because Mustang half reaches towards him as if to touch his face, or at least try to hide it.
Kidding, darling. Of course. I was able to make them see sense, wasn't I? Just a quick call over. I make the time, you see.
Ed's just realized he can trap Mustang's ankle between his own if he reaches around the fucking table leg. Or he would if Mustang hadn't somehow intuited this and fucking moved his bastard legs away when a pair of big hands land on Ed's shoulders. Ed's about to change his grip on his fork when he recognizes Gian's scorpion tattoos.
Ed! Gian says right in his ear, bending practically double.
There's a waiter's apron in the corner of Ed's eye, which means Gian's expanded from the fancy noodle bar for the summer.
I didn't realize this was you.
The whole table grinds to a halt, staring up at the help that suddenly revealed he wasn't actually furniture.
Hey, Ed says, because the only other thing that comes to mind is, ah, shit.
You work here now?
Yep. I just wanted to come say hi, Gian says. Friends of yours?
His attention travels down the table, almost tangibly stopping at Mustang.
Who's this?
Ha 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 ha. Ed feels his expression cartwheel as he cycles through emotions, taxonomies and labels of varying accuracy, absurdity, and mortification.
This is my man.
Huh. Hey, just like me.
Gian shakes Ed in his usual way, easy friendly, entirely at odds with the too loud laugh and barracuda grin leveled at Mustang.
Well, X-Man now, but it's good to see you're not lonely, yeah?
Since Ed's seen Gian laugh off a direct punch to the face, and the most formal their relationship ever got was a 2-week period where they'd unspokenly go to Gian's place every day after gym and blow each other because their work schedules happened to coincide, all this seems a little out of character. Since Ed currently has to stay in character, he tries for a laugh that'll pass nervous instead of threatening.
Yeah, it's real great.
It is, Gian agrees, absolutely not picking up what Ed's putting down, very clearly on purpose.
Lucky me, too. Here I was thinking about how good it'd be to go and see you more often.
The brigadier's wife is giving Ed some pretty alarmed eye contact, but Mustang is taking this whole thing with the kind of bemusement only afforded to men who know they can have everyone in the building rounded up and shot before the entree's finished cooking.
Meeting Ed's friends is always a pleasure, he says, affably condescending, a lead actor shaking hands with the understudy. Are you here with the dessert menu?
Welp, that about puts a cherry on it.
Of course, Gian says, still grinning. Sir, he straightens up, giving Ed's shoulders one last squeeze. Would you like to hear tonight's specials? Mustang blithely orders an espresso and something caramel that Ed recognizes as for him, and the brigadier's wife, a little hesitantly, follows suit. Gian takes the orders and repeats it all back verbatim without writing a thing down, as usual, and gives a last wink and grin to the table before prowling away. The lobbyists are already chuckling, sending genially condescending glances down at Ed, and Mustang is smiling. But the last look he gives Gian's retreating back is calculating enough that Ed reflexively says,
Mustang, do not murder my friend.
Murder him? Mustang says, going all wide-eyed and taken aback. More chuckling breaks out along the table. But it's not the kind from people who think the joke is that Mustang wouldn't. Darling, I'd send him champagne. I'm simply glad there was someone to take care of you before I came along. More laughter. Ed can tell they're not fucking getting anywhere further with this, so he lets a reasonable enough time pass before saying, Excuse me, bathroom, and eels off between the chairs. Gian's waiting for him by the waiter's station.
What the fuck was that?
Ed hisses, one of the potted palms suffering a near miss from his waving arm.
Hey, you gotta make sure he acts right, Gian says, not even pretending not to know he was being insane. Guys like that, you gotta keep him in line. Now he knows you've got a crazy ex-boyfriend who's still obsessed with you and not afraid to go back to prison.
You were none of those things, Ed feels he has to point out, if only to make sure it's all true.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to know that,
Gian says reasonably. He studies Ed. Hey, you need some food poisoning or something? You didn't look real happy out there. Ed puffs up his cheeks and exhales.
No, it's not. It's those other fuckers. They're being all, aw, you poor bumpkin. It's annoying.
Him? He's fine. It's not what it looks like. I know him. Then he adds, and if it was what it looked like, your best bet would be to stay the fuck away and let me handle it. You know that, right?
Gian gives him a look almost as mild as Mustang's.
You telling me to be shittier to my friends, asshole?
Ugh. I mean it, Ed insists. I don't... This isn't some fucking... This is not some guy making creepy comments about my mouth in a bar, okay?
I only scare off creeps so you don't get aggravated assault charges, Gian points out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This isn't like that.
Mustang's probably not actually gonna do anything to Gian. It's beneath him to care. But they aren't alone at that table, and one of those assholes might very well assume Mustang intends to do something and try and present him with a little gift-wrapped fait accompli in the form of Gian's head. You don't want to get your life tanked over stupid shit. You can't help me the same way it happens for other people. I'm not...
Ed breaks off, searching for a word that isn't normal. That won't make him sound like a giant prick and not finding any.
And I'm a big boy, babe, Gian says patiently. I can make my own choices. You think we don't see a lot of that kind of guy in here? I know what I'm doing.
That's true. And Gian's not fresh out of the woods, either. He's 6 years older and back in school after 2 years as an enlisted mechanic and another 3 working for his dad's catering business.
Ugh, fine. Ed blows out a breath and frowns up at Gian's familiar freckles and curls.
How come I never did date you anyway?
Because my wild nights are 7 hours of board game roleplay and you hit people with chairs, Gian reminds him.
Oh, right.
Ed had forgotten about the board games, possibly because every time Gian invited him over to the group, he'd fallen asleep on the couch within minutes.
How's Landy?
Gian's face lights up.
She's great. Have you met those kids she's coaching? Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to help out for a bit. Edric twisted his ankle, so Landy asked if I'd swap in and just pretend I'm the same Ed who has actual nationals medals. We're hoping the parents don't notice. Hey, wear some sunglasses and pretend to be hungover. Nobody'll pick up on a thing. Gian nudges Ed's bicep, chin tipping out toward the dining room. You like him? Ed makes a face before he can catch it. Gian starts cackling. Oh, wow. Oh, man, is this him? Is this that Ling guy? Ed's throat makes a sort of ugh noise without his permission. No, God, fuck. He's not Ling. He's worse. Worse? Gian hoots. Oh, man, you gonna be okay out there? You gonna need some napkins? You gonna need a chaperone? Ed half-heartedly socks him in the abs. What the hell? What happened to defending my honor? What happened to protecting my virtue? It's not your virtue I'm worried about. It's that if you stab him, it's me who has to go mopping these floors. Fuck you. Just for that, I'm telling him no tip. Oh, is that what you tell him? Ed fights off Gian's noogieing and careens back to the table before the Brigadier's wife decides he's been gone long enough to make Mustang free game. Or the rest of the what's-her-faces decide he's blowing his ex back by the busboy racks and tell Mustang to ride out and reclaim his honor. Ed needn't have bothered. When it comes time to pay, Mustang smiles as he drops a cash tip into the payfold. The bill's so crisp it's obvious they're of a denomination never handled by more than a handful of people.
It was a pleasure meeting you, he tells Gian with all sincerity, gaze open and direct as he hands over the money. As if he really did score Ed and knows what Gian's missing, and knows Gian knows it too. I do hope we'll meet again.
Gian rifles the bills, counting, and gives Mustang a real grin. Me too, he says. Hope you last. Ciao! They leave. They say goodbye to the what's-their-faces. They get in when the valet brings the car. Mustang looks over at Ed and says,
Man?
Ed socks him in the thigh. Mustang oofs and catches his fist on the withdraw, grinning.
So that is the boy you taught to mop floors?
Ed jerks his fist out of Mustang's grip. Can you not be a bastard for 5 whole seconds?
Not consecutively,
Mustang says cheerfully, hitting the gas.
Don't you worry. I tipped him enough to be exactly as much of a bastard as I like. Honestly, I'm just surprised he's your type.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing. Miss Rockabell was always such an intelligent, professional young lady is all.
Ha! Shows what Mustang knows. Look in the mirror and tell me dressing professionals what makes someone nice. Gian's nice. Winry isn't.
Nice is all very well and good, Mustang prevaricates.
Now only half paying attention, turned with his arm braced on Ed's seat to look out the back window.
I just assumed you preferred them a bit, well, brighter.
Because he's a fucking waiter? Mustang gives him a don't be stupid look.
Because he picked a fight with me.
Because he thought you were going to try and roofie me, and I would have to shiv you with a steak knife, and have to go on the fucking run, Mustang. Good grief, you're not exactly Prince fucking Charming.
Roofie you? Mustang says indignantly,
looking like Ed just spit in his lap.
Men in my tax bracket don't roofie people. They buy you a Dion fur coat, a Ferrari convertible, and then take you to their chateau on the Seine. And then they drop 60,000 cents on a case of Ardcloud, sit back and say, Darling, anytime you feel like expressing some gratitude.
Ugh, they absolutely roofie if they're into fucked up shit. Which, according to everyone, you are. So I don't understand why you're acting all shocked about this. You can't spread all your rumors and then go off surprised when people think I'm going to be found in your icebox as a couple of julienned kidneys and a pickled head.
Mustang makes a face. This is all because of your snake, I hope you know. He complains, as if he has any rights to object. Not to mention, you're vastly underestimating what people will do for money, or for free. Get drugged unconscious so some creep can fucking piss on your face? Entire brothels specialize in it, Mustang says, absentmindedly cutting off three cars. Not to mention entire social clubs. It's no difficulty to arrange it for yourself if you know where to look.
Of course he knows where to look. Mustang, I think you're overestimating how many of these people are sane.
Sanity is not a prerequisite to accurate risk-reward calculations, which are, generally, a prerequisite to staying powerful and rich, Mustang says distractedly as he turns into traffic. A poor man has to work much harder to get the same attention a rich man gets for free, especially in Central. That said, does Gion have to go?
No, he's... Ed calibrates to what's actually being said just in time. Mustang, I fucking meant it. Do not fucking murder my friend.
Mustang has the nerve to shoot him another indignant look. The first response is hardly murder. Besides, if he's dangerous to you, he's dangerous to others. And removing him from his sphere of influence...
Sphere of Mustang? He is a university student and a waiter.
Don't underestimate waiters. They have access and the advantage of functional invisibility. Mustang lectures,
as if he didn't just condescend all over Gion's life, no matter what he's saying now.
Not to mention, you hardly have an accurate sense of how dangerous a given person is, given your predilection for baiting serial killers.
Predilection for one time is not... You just don't fucking know what words mean, do you? Listen to me very carefully. Do not murder Gion. Do not get him murdered, or arrested, or fired, or evicted.
I'm hardly going to...
Hardly nothing. Just don't. Do not, Ed threatens. I know what you're like, goddamn arsonist jackboot bastard. The fucking dilettante act doesn't work on me.
For some reason, this makes Mustang laugh, big and happy and from the chest. All right, if you insist, he says, grinning out the windshield as they speed up, merging onto promenade. I meant it about calling me Roy, you know. It's not as though we're in the office anymore.
I'll call you whatever the fuck I want, Ed says reflexively. Be grateful you're getting Mustang.
Suit yourself, Mustang says, still way too pleased for no reason. Do it enough around others and they'll assume it's all you call me, though.
Oh, you want me to throw in a daddy general or two? A Mr. President? A Lord High... Watch the fucking road!
So that's that discussion tabled, because Mustang thinks turn signals, right of way, and the brake pedal are for other people. And Ed has to abandon yelling at him about not killing Gion in favor of yelling at him about not killing Ed. Since that lasts all the way home, it's a little difficult to restart the original topic, especially since the next time Ed sees him, they're in the car again, this time on their way out to the suburbs. I have a standing invitation to the Central Alchemists Rotary Club or something, whatever they've called their monthly piss-up, Mustang says. Given most of them dream little dreams at night about eating my bloodied heart sans seasoning, I generally don't see much point in attending. But I expect you'll find their shop talk less boring, if nothing else. Ah, here we are. And they pull up in front of some fucking mansion. A real one. Not one of the townhouse mansionlets trying to jam two gazebos and a water feature into the yard where Mustang lives. It's another garden party, but for alchemists this time. Ed's vaguely expecting the host to be Armstrong, even though this place is half the size of their manor. But it's a glittery lady in a violently teal dress who welcomes Mustang with a kiss on both cheeks and a smile like a circling vulture.
Roy! Oh, finally! We feared you'd die shut up in those awful offices. Oh, absolutely everyone is here. You must say hello. She sweeps through her hall dramatically enough to take them in her undertow, trailing behind as she sails through a pair of ornate glass doors and out into a busy garden. Darling, she cries, loud enough to be heard in the next country. Look who finally made it to us. Heads swivel all across the yard. Mustang stepped out onto the terrace, but Ed finds himself slowing a step and a half behind. This many feasting eyes is nothing new, but there's a ripple of something else beneath the open fascination, a thread of unease plucked just once, but its echoes thrumming and reverberating. The hostess and her pipe-smoking husband are greeting Mustang now, but Ed can't take his eyes off the crowd. The buzz of voices dipped when they came out, but it's back to normal now. But people are still staring. And it's not like they're hostile. But something about it has Ed half convinced there's something horrible just behind them. He compulsively glances back, but that just makes him realize it's not past them that people are looking. It's just Mustang. Again. Just Mustang. Ed might have got the state alchemist treatment from the general public wherever he went, good and bad. But Mustang is no scrawny preteen and an entirely different kind of alchemist besides. He's a war hero. You don't get that by fixing popped tires and cracked vases on street corners. Mustang smiles out at the party like he's got it surrounded and leads the hosts down the veranda stairs, space opening for them and waiters zooming in from all sides. Ed follows, and it takes him another second to figure out what the continuing wrong note here is. That it's not fear. Not exactly. These are alchemists, after all. Rich people like to pretend they're above fear. Disgust and desire. Like that one time Ed ran across that scar fetish freak who got really gross about his chest and his automail. Jealousy. Envy. They don't like Mustang, but they'd take what he has if they could get it. Some people do approach, greeting Mustang like they're all good old boys here, which, well, they are. These guys are mostly older, and while they don't move with the kind of straight-backed stolidity Ed associates with brass in civvies, they also don't really seem civilian. Retired? A couple of them are vaguely familiar, but it's not like Ed ever paid all that much attention to what were ostensibly his colleagues, even before he put nearly a decade in the way of any kind of recollection. There's a distant memory of Mustang, Colonel then, handing over a stack of mail that accumulated over his first year, since Ed hadn't actually returned to that office, with some vague comment about how there's a few notes in there from other state alchemists and officers, and how he might like to actually read them. Ed did take a look. But when, by the third one, it became obvious that this was all just dried-up old geezers inviting him for tea, he chucked the whole pile to Al to use as kitty litter. In retrospect, all those invitations were clearly attempts to try and codge some kind of mentorship onto him. Because when you're a dried-up old geezer alchemist out of ideas, you can at least squeeze some prestige out of having a famous student. Though he's also pretty sure now that more than a few of the non-alchemist geezers thought they could use a nice, moldable young prodigy in their camps. An alchemist in your pocket is nothing to sneeze at. But by definition, ones without ambition of their own are pretty hard to come by. But Mustang got him first, and that was enough old geezer in Ed's life. Especially since he was the only one who got the fucking message when Ed stuck a spear in Bradley's face and took him seriously enough to negotiate accordingly after. Ed has to smile to himself a bit. He certainly didn't think himself lucky then, with Colonel Bastard being a weapons-grade douchebag and driving Ed insane at every turn. But if his Class A felony had been discovered and leveraged by some other alchemist, some other officer, if Mustang hadn't been bastard enough to cut that kind of deal with a little kid, it's not like you can reasonably predict that if not for X, then certainly Y, they sure as shit wouldn't be where they are now. So Mustang's got himself a little alchemist, has he? And Ed can't deny he'd rather be on Mustang's arm here than any one of these old bastards. Just learning, he says earnestly, to the mustachioed guy who's so graciously broken off Mustang's dick to spare some attention for his accessory. Just a little, you know, I'm still in school. But working for the engineering collective already, we hear, another one says. There's a couple more of them paying direct attention to Ed now. Only so much room in Mustang's lap, after all. So might as well talk to Ed to stay in his orbit. Digging ditches, eh? Yup, Ed agrees, deciding he should probably sound happily relieved instead of bored to tears about it. Because when you're not good at something, the last thing you want to do is invite people to think you want something even harder. The kind of alchemist he's supposed to be right now is one who needs Branson to tell him which way is up. All day long. Gives us lots of time to talk, though. And everybody's real nice. I'm learning lots. Not much in the way of creativity, though, I'd bet. The first one says, with the mustache that deserves an extra O at the end. You know the students array? Okay, that's a little insulting. Yeah, Ed says, because what else answer is there? Babies know the students array. I've done it a couple times. You know, it's been a while since I've seen one, Mustachio says, and produces a packet, shaking out a brand new stick of chalk. Everyone's bird comes out a little different, you know. Care to oblige? What the hell? Ed takes it. There's some chuckles as he looks for the nearest flat surface, which happens to be a fancy little iron garden table. It'll be ruined, since Ed highly doubts it'll be a good idea for him to transmute the surface back afterwards. But that's just what you get when you invite goddamn alchemists into your home. He touches the chalk to the metal and stalls. The chuckling grows, and Ed finds himself grinning, too, shaking his head as he starts scrawling the array. They think he's laughing at himself, the easy half-embarrassment of a child just aware enough to know it's performing the wrong trick, but not bright enough to know why. He fucking forgot the orientation on the student's array. He hasn't put an orientation on an array for years. It's like the intake modulator. You just stop using it when you can regulate energy flow on the fly. And it's very fucking funny that right now it's coming back around to look like amateur incompetence. He finally manages to complete the circuit, putting his hands down and activating the array. The bird comes out looking like an albatross that did its world circuit by way of being caught in some sailor's rigging. But it's got the right number of legs and wings and even some feather pattern, too. Though that's kind of applied kind of haphazardly, given he only remembered about it at the last second. There's a lot of politely sarcastic clapping. Mustangs come up beside him at that point, announcing himself by picking the bird out of the circle before the crackle has died down. Students array, really? He says, all amused. You know, I don't think I've ever seen you do one of these before. Is this a seagull? He examines it. No, an owl? Ed was going for hawk, actually, so he pouts vengefully up at him. What else am I supposed to do? You never show me anything cool. Now there's a lot of chuckling. Oh, go on, Mustang. Indulge the boy, Mustachio says, genial with an undertone of challenge. Surely he deserves it. There's a lot of agreement from the crowd, though not really that enthusiastic. which Ed supposes is fair, given they're asking for a demonstration from an alchemist whose party tricks are less pretty fireworks and more explode a semi-truck from 100 yards away. Mustang looks at them, then at Ed. He smiles. Do you trust me?
Bitch.
I don't know, Ed says, not quite able to keep the mocking edge out of his tone as much as he probably should. What are you gonna do to me? Come here, Mustang says. Only he leads Ed further out into the garden, to the open, grassy area before the paving around the big central fountain. They turn back around to face the house, and Mustang takes his wrists, one hand dry and cool and the other grainily rough in the glove. He puts Ed's back to his chest, cupping Ed's hands around the bird with his own.
You're going to toss it on three,
he says in Ed's ear, the cool trickle of a foreign alchemical discharge beginning to play over Ed's knuckles.
Ready? One, two.
Mustang snaps his fingers as Ed throws. Fire blooms as it arcs up, two plumes slashing outwards, upwards, so that the moment before it's engulfed, the bird takes the peak of its arc on brilliant wings of flame. Big wings. Seems like Mustang decided he's got a show off for both of them. There's oohs and ahs, a scattering of applause from around the garden. Mustang lets them step apart, but twists Ed's hand in his, bringing it up to grin and kiss the back of Ed's knuckles before using it to make them bow amidst the clapping. Everyone is watching them, dutifully delivering applause. The smiles, the way they eye the glove, the whispers. They all fucking hate Mustang. There's no fucking way Mustang isn't registering it. But Ed can't not poke it regardless. Full of fans, huh? He says under his breath, ignoring how it's his right hand Mustang's got, how it started to buzz. I thought you were trying to move away from the whole God of War thing. Mustang gives him a faintly wincing look at the name, though more like he just got shown something incredibly tacky than because he's taking moral issue with it.
Alchemy is power. By its nature, there is no hiding it. The only way is to shape what people expect me to use it for.
That's true. Nobody becomes a state alchemist by bribery or nepotism or faking it. The program delivers rewards because it delivers results. The homunculi wanted people who could successfully perform human transmutation, and you can't reach that level of proficiency without a solid foundation in chemistry, physics, mathematics, without being able to hold a mental target and organize your own thoughts effectively enough to channel the power the way it needs to go. You don't survive alchemy if you're stupid. So Mustang has to look stupid in other ways. Not harmless, but simple. Usable. The gaggle of state alchemists closes in around them again. Broad grins and congratulations all around. Some of them even managing to sound genuine. And this time Ed recognizes one of the men. Though he's no alchemist. It's Major General Hallcrow. They recognize each other at pretty much the same time. Halcrow's eyes widen, then narrow, then snap to Mustang. Ed knows just enough about what went down during the coup to know Halcrow's one of the only generals left who knows Mustang was actually cooing. Mustang played dumb later and insisted Halcrow got bad information, since he was clearly mobilizing forces to protect the capital, not anything like the other way around. And when Grumman took over and all the other brass got the chop for conspiracy, Hallcrow pretty obviously saw the wisdom in keeping his mouth shut and all hailing the new regime. But that doesn't mean he grew any goodwill toward Mustang. A whole host of shocks, bewilderments, angers, frustrations, and hatreds go bounding over Halcrow's face in a flipbook of micro-expressions before he visibly decides to fold it away, settling on a hard, thwarted kind of smile.
Still showboating, I see, he says, just genial enough to pass as a friendly insult. If you've got it.
Mustang agrees, a smile clearly calculated to infuriate right back. Halcrow's gaze returns to Ed. Ed just stares back like a livestock animal, because there's no point actually confirming anything. And if Halcrow points and yells, "Look, it's the Full Metal Alchemist," it's not Ed who's going to end up the spectacle.
And still passing on bad habits to your protege.
Oh, please. Ed just barely manages to catch his own eye roll and turn it into a look of appropriately imbecilic adoration towards Mustang. Only this backfires when Mustang, honest to God, chucks him on the chin.
Oh, I'm not worried,
he says lightly, as Ed tries to maintain cow eyes and simultaneously explode Mustang with his mind.
His natural advantages keep us well safe from that.
There's a few chuckles from those who clearly agree that Ed's natural advantages ensure that the only things he picks up are in the gym.
You're not teaching him, are you? Asks a man with a salt and pepper beard, in a only mildly interested way. I know a few candidates worth your time if it's an apprentice you're looking for. Apprenticeship. If only I had the time.
Mustang laughs.
No, no, it's just a few things here and there with this one. Who knows? One day he might even figure out how to keep my drinks cold.
The group laughs, uproarious. Because if you're an alchemist worth donkey spit, you know temperature transfer arrays are the kind of thing that gets you a state title, if you can manage it. Mustang grips the back of Ed's neck and grins at him. Sly, in a way that could look conciliatory on the outside, but Ed knows is Mustang inviting him in on the real joke. And it's not like Ed doesn't enjoy sending up these jealous bastards, but he has no choice but to smile back like he's just happy to be included. Like he has no idea what a temperature array even means and hasn't been able to do them since he was fucking 11. Luckily, nobody's paying him any real attention besides Halcrow, and they've drifted near enough to a table of snacks that when the conversation turns to alchemy development programs, Ed can keep his mouth shut by focusing on what he wants to drink. There's quite a lot there, actually. Whoever is catering this party knows what's up. There's chai and brightly colored bottles Ed doesn't recognize. He picks up one of the green ones and likes the look of the fizzy bubbles inside, even if he can't read the cayenne label.
It's a shame, one of the men is saying. No real up-and-comers. Oh, the apprentices are decent enough, I suppose. They'll shape up in time, but nothing like you yourself were, Roy.
The cap's weird, too. Looks kind of like a twist-off, but it's metal on glass and won't turn when Ed tries it repeatedly.
Or, of course, Full Metal. Such a shame. Some talents only come once a generation, I suppose.
Twice, Ed thinks firmly, trying to squeeze the bottle in a way that won't make it twist, but also won't make his fingers ache. Maybe it's just the fact that his right dumbass hand has the dexterity of vermicelli, especially on small stuff. He and Al are pretty used to codging together workarounds. Winry and May open a lot of jars in their house, but he can't exactly alchemize the bottle open here and now, or even twist it in his shirt, probably. Are you supposed to pry this shit up like beer? Ed's aware that some goddamn geezers are looking at him again, talking, but he's been laughed at already and doesn't want to acknowledge that it's for a legitimate reason this time. A scarred hand covers his, taking the bottle from him.
There's hinge points, Mustang murmurs in his ear, showing him as he twists the top off with no apparent effort. You have to squeeze the sides.
Like every goddamn medicine container ever. Ed's only recourse is to turn his face up to Mustang, with his eyes as big as they'll go, sinking his fingers into Mustang's arm in a violently adoring grip. Wow, he breathes, letting a great abundance of feeling stand in for greater abundance of physical abuse. I never would have figured
that out. Nonsense, my starling. You would have reached it in time, Mustang says, visibly trying not to guffaw. You know you don't think straight when you're hungry. Come, let's get some food for your drink. They unceremoniously leave the circle of conversation, probably because Mustang won't be able to keep it together if Ed continues, and because he can get away with being this level of dick. Okay, I can see why you don't fucking go to these, Ed growls as they shore up on a bench between plants, Ed having stuffed as much tiny party food as possible onto an equally tiny plate. Especially when fucking Halcrow shows up. Is he here all the fucking time, or is tonight just fucking special?
He has oversight of some of the military's technical development programs. Alchemy counts. Mustang's mouth is still twitching. He talked about you, practically directly to you, and you weren't even listening.
You were listening, Ed protests. I didn't need to be.
Yes, Mustang agrees, still very much riding his own private joy pony. So when he brought up Fullmetal and where he could possibly have gone, you were busy demonstrating your intellectual prowess on a soda bottle.
Hey, I have a medical condition. I got nerve problems. My hand's still messed up.
Goodness, what's that like?
Mustang says, eyes widening in concern. Ed smacks his knee. Okay, but he is talking, you bastard. He abso-fucking-lutely knows who I am.
Oh, undoubtedly, Mustang agrees. It's not as if he can do anything about it, though. How's he going to prove it? What's that going to achieve beyond making himself more expensive to me than he's worth? But since he decided this was the prime opportunity to needle me anyway, he's made himself out as an idiot. Because to anyone paying attention, he just implied my new pet is the Fullmetal Alchemist.
Ed eyeballs him. What do you tell people when they come out and ask about Fullmetal?
I simply remind them that those files were sealed on the president's direct order, and that if a relevant issue has arisen, then surely it must go directly to the president's desk. And then I sit there and look smug and knowing.
Mustang says, looking smug and knowing.
Which in turn makes them think I don't know anything and I'm trying to convince them I know far more than I do. And to save face for having the country's beloved youngest state alchemist die under my command.
Ugh, and they buy that?
What's not to buy? It's the truth, Mustang says innocently. Those files are sealed, and Mustang was technically the major of my office staff.
Ugh, Ed repeats, with double emphasis.
Some of them think I offed you myself, Mustang offers casually. Or at minimum didn't intervene in whatever killed you.
What? Why?
To eliminate competition, Mustang says dryly. Before you came along, Amstrad's youngest ever state alchemist was me.
Ed gapes at him. That's so fucking... You recruited me!
And then you turned out to be a brighter bulb than expected, with Bradley's personal favor, when everyone knows he never liked me. You were a more powerful alchemist, too. At only 15, I couldn't afford to let you grow.
That still makes no fucking sense. Even if all that bullshit were true, state alchemists aren't competing with each other.
It's power. Everyone's always competing for it, Mustang says prosaically. When we were both called to Bradley's office, you seemed to get off with a stern talking to, while I was all but court-martialed. The popular assumption was that you'd done something, and since you were nominally under my command, Bradley saw it as an opportunity to curb my enthusiasm, as well as indebt a younger, more malleable alchemist. You became an active liability to me. Mustang shrugs. It doesn't have to be an airtight argument to make a pervasive rumor. I couldn't figure out how to use you, so I decided to get rid of you.
People think you killed me over that?
Mustang raises an eyebrow, sardonic. Just like I killed Lieutenant Ross. Because it looked like she'd killed Hughes. Ed feels himself standing in that alley again, the stinking, steaming corpse between them, and realizes he knows how Landy felt when he'd squared with Bugze, when he'd punched out that cop. This man you know isn't known to you at all. Only Mustang hadn't actually killed her. Ross is a major covered in medals now, though. And the prevailing theory is that she took the fall when I murdered someone else in her place. Mustang says dryly, there was an extremely well-documented corpse, after all. Ed eyeballs him for a couple seconds. Why don't you want me back from the dead? Mustang gives him an unimpressed look. You want to recommission? Well, no, but... Ed doesn't really want to try and articulate why he doesn't have any kind of plan for it if he does have to re-enter society as himself. Because he really should have one, and there's no actual good reason why he doesn't. I figured you'd want more big shots on your side. Not like you got a lot of friends out here currently. Mustang shrugs. I'd appreciate some notice if you do decide, in the interests of staying on top of it. But it's not as though you're unavailable to me now. You'd become rather less available if you do return, frankly. Right. Their relationship only ever started because they were useful to each other. And it's not like it's irrelevant now. If I do come back, everybody who ever met me here is gonna think you were making fun of them, Ed points out. They're gonna think you made fools of them on purpose and get pissed off. Mustang smiles. But you're so young, he says. You wanted to see whether you were even up for it, after years and years away. And you were a child when you last dealt with Central's works. So I invited you on my arm, told you to stay quiet and watch, make your decision more informed. His smile gains a few more cents at Ed's expense. Softler aside, it's not as though you've said anything particularly out of character. Hey! So don't rush on my account, Mustang says, standing up in a way that takes him out of range of Ed's smack. Whatever you do is hardly going to get me promoted now, and there's very few ways off the stage once you're on. He goes right back into the thick of it, the hostess materializing at his arm again, Halcrow and the group of alchemists changing and growing as other handfuls of people trickle up. Most of them are military-affiliated. The older alchemists who've retired. The smaller contract ones who never made it to state title, but do state work. The routine stuff that doesn't take creativity or power. None of them look like the platoon-level guys who can do maybe two or three arrays. Stuff like condense water or ram out a foxhole. But then again, this is not the kind of party where enlisted guys get invited. There's also a bunch of academics here. Ed can tell by the clothes and the way the people move, seen from his corner of the veranda. There's two distinct orbits in this party. The state and civilian don't much intersect, though that's probably because one of them is currently orbiting around Mustang. Ed gets it. If you've spent your whole professional career studying the natural world and its laws and discovering the wonders of alchemy, you are not going to be super excited to hang with the guy who uses those wonders to explode people. Unless you are also a guy who super likes to explode people. Shit. To anybody who doesn't know better, Mustang is one bullshit monologue away from being Kimberly. But it's not like Ed wants to talk to the academics, either. They're all cowards, hiding in their tenured labs and teaching intro courses and not researching anything more substantial than slime molds. They're too self-centered and short-sighted to work on anything but their own self-censored personal projects, worried the state will come by and force them into boot camp if their work goes a sneeze beyond theoretical. So they just argue with each other in their incestuous little publications over whether you can turn math inside out, or if there should be an entire new notation system for alchemy invented from scratch.
They think they're too good to set up shop and repair broken bikes and radios and laundry mangles, like the little street alchemists. They want the money and power and prestige, but they don't want the price. They don't want it for anything. Their goals begin and end at me, me, me. It's pathetic. Ed probably should talk to them, though. Pay attention to who they are, at least. If he's going to come back as ex-Fullmetal, he decides. He will nationalize some of the fucking university labs. Mustang will do it, if he says. And get some fucking alchemy programs going that aren't just for churning out cement engineers. This is the kind of thing he'll get invited to, besides. The kind of people he'll be peered with. The networks he'll have to wield. The ones he'll have to watch out for, because if he does come back, there's no way he won't be seen as anything other than one of Mustang's. It'll take something drastic to change that. Does he want to change that? What would he even do otherwise? What's he coming back as Fullmetal for? That's the question, isn't it? And it feels cheap and stupid and small when all his current reasons boil down to, it gets me attention. So what he's got right now are bigger reasons not to come back. Mustang's got a point about how things will change. Because right now, anyone coming at them won't be accounting for him as an alchemist. They'll lose that advantage if he drops the act. He can see Mustang in the crowd, at the center of things, wreathed in cigar smoke, a lean gleam of white skin and black hair. There's gray heads, white mustaches, wrinkles, and paunches all around. Mustang's the youngest one there. It abruptly reminds Ed of his own younger self, in an upside-down, bizarre funhouse mirror way. Of when he'd been all of 15 and could order around soldiers thrice his age. Technically. In practice, it's a little fucking awkward, and Ed never really had the inclination for it anyway. It's fine for little stuff, but if you need something done right, it's just better to do it yourself. In any case, he and Al were running around being a couple of living, somewhat breathing, Class A alchemical felonies, so there wasn't exactly much point to establishing a chain of command, which would lead to nothing but questions, court-martials, and, most importantly, some serious crimps in their ability to travel. But there were occasions where Ed had to deal with other soldiers, mostly guards and MPs. And while the state watch went a long way, it didn't gloss everything. Most people think a little kid running around and talking rude is funny, but only so long as they don't actually feel their authority threatened. Mustang's walking that line, and he doesn't even have the default protection of dismissal assigned to children. So he's quiet, lets other people talk, but doesn't let himself get talked over. When he does speak, it's easy, friendly, non-committal. What you'd expect, actually, from a guy with an ego who nevertheless recognizes he's in over his head. Does Mustang think he's in over his head? Ed's not so sure. Though, that just might be because what drives Mustang isn't anything less implacable than gravity. There is no over his head for him. Hawkeye's face when she'd told Ed about Ishval, the occasional distance in Mustang's own eyes. It's not ambition, not any more so than some religious nutjob's conviction that their god will protect them from bullets or zap them to heaven when they die. They have exalted the objective. It must be done, therefore it will be. There is no longer any water deeper than they can swim. It's big. Ed had known what Mustang was trying to do, of course, but it's one thing to know of the work and another to see it in action. Messengers and aides and phone calls at all hours, stacks of reports thick as his hand, sweating in those fucking tennis whites, hiding fake secret books in his house, endless nights with people you hate, time streaming into the dark on trails of tobacco and faked laughs. Work whose results you might not ever see. There's no decisive stroke of fire here. No single thunderstorm of alchemy raised and gone again, its task complete. This is hundreds of days, nights, channels, soldiers, drinks, scent, smiles, 100,000 strokes of the grindstone, all sharpening down to a single killing edge. Overthrowing the homunculi had been a single, extremely well-defined goal, a solitary and direct threat for all that it was an existential one. Building a country into something new, building a future, that's the size of the problem Ling's working on. The depth in his voice when he spoke about overhauling the tax code, consolidating the clan militaries, importing new agricultural techniques. It's the size of what Mustang wants now. Mustang was wrong. He does need to make president. Grumman may be all right for the moment, but if he dies tomorrow, there'll be a succession fight that there's no guarantee Mustang will win. Not now. And whoever does take the chair next will have the authority to throw him out on his ear or take direct command of the army at will. And fuck knows where that will go. Especially with the executive structure still pretty much unchanged from when Bradley kicked it 8 years ago. And there's other reformers, but if anybody else had the leverage to overtake Mustang or consolidate with him, they would have by now, because it's not like Mustang doesn't take any opportunity to rope in the nearest sucker who looks like they might lend half a hand. And Ed's not ditching him. There's few enough hitters in Mustang's court as it is. That hasn't stopped him any, but it's certainly not giving him the kind of weight he could have. Part of the reason May could take Ed and Al on that tour through Xing was because she was already out there visiting a bunch of other clans, mostly small and with limited holdings like the Chang, introducing herself and handing out presents, but most importantly, bringing the good news that His High Holiness Ling the Whatever, may he live 10,000 years, was prepared to make an alliance of the minor clans, and a Yao envoy would be arriving soon. And also, incidentally, if they didn't want the Yao to just smile and eat them all whole, then there should be an alliance, a true one, so that the minor clans can come to Ling and say, "We will ally with you." For the gift of forewarning and time to plan, the Chang got their own support block, which let them present demands as a unified front and got them concessions they wouldn't have won otherwise. Which Ed knows for a fact from how Zhiqi Yao started slingshotting suitors in May's direction. Sons from big, sure clans whose marriages would seal a formal alliance with the Chang, and that would put them above the rest and land them firmly under the Yao, distanced from the minority bloc and ridding them of their leader. Which is why May's mom had decided that her poor little baby girl needed to hustle off to school and not so much as think about boys until she got her diploma. Because the Chang weren't giving up shit to be anyone's lapdog, thank you very much. May would marry eventually. Soon. But not yet. Available allies might not be as ready on the ground for Mustang, especially what with how he's going at trade with a hammer. Because Mustang hasn't promised anybody anything, so nobody knows for sure how things will shake out for them. So they aren't approaching him, lest they turn out to be on his invisible hit list. Not to mention, everybody thinks it's not even Mustang's hit list. Because, as evidenced by the damn Firebird, they're all pretty sure they know what Mustang's deal is. And it starts and ends at showing off for dumb blondes gagging for his dick. "So what was the plan?" Halcrow says from right behind him. Ed very nearly swears and pitches into the bushes, grabbing convulsively at the veranda railing and biting his lip at the last second. "What's he got you doing now?" Halcrow demands as Ed turns around, silently berating himself. He hadn't even noticed the fucker come up. "Running around where no one can see. More of the same, is that it?" "Uh-huh," Ed says, very naturally. Halcrow seems to be operating under the understanding that they're continuing some ongoing conversation. But if they are, it's one that's only in Halcrow's head. "He sent you out of the country, didn't he? Krita, is it?" His voice isn't loud, but it is vicious. He's not drunk, but he's mad, and he's not sober. "It's you, isn't it?
You are how he's making his contact, getting his information. Ha! His money, even. I should have known. That bastard. Treason was the least of it. Ed decides he's not dealing with this. He backs up all the way against the veranda pillar, hands splaying against the railing behind him like he doesn't know what to do with them. Lets his eyes go big. Mister, you're scaring me. This makes Halcrow stop short, stalled out in equal parts incredulity and confusion. And Ed takes it as his escape hatch and eels past, darting around the nearest hedge and disappearing into the bushes. God, the guy's a bigger idiot than he thought if he's decided it's a great idea to start cornering Ed and risk coming across as schizophrenic or a conspiracy nut in public. Or maybe he's just so fucking pissed that he doesn't care. Which means Mustang should probably keep more of an eye on him lest he decide to make even more exciting choices. Ed decides to circle the house and get back to the garden the long way around, which should keep him out of the way of both Halcrow and anybody else who might have questions about what the fuck he's doing sneaking through the mansion's roses. And he doesn't encounter anybody besides a couple giggling kids playing hide-and-seek. He finds a garden path and a side door to the terrace hall and heads back inside, only to find Mustang already coming back the other way. He's acquired a cigarette holder, tips smoking as he holds it in two fingers. It makes him even more revoltingly dandy than he already is. And Ed thought that meter was broken. I thought you didn't smoke, he says, because it'd be better if he did. If all Ed could imagine of taste is an ashtray. I don't, Mustang says placidly. A little too placidly. His expression has gone limp on him, laid over his features like a wet washcloth. Are you gonna hurl? Ed says interestedly. You know, I just might, Mustang says, conversational. And it's now pretty clear that his flaccid gaze is the thousand-yard intent of someone evaluating what nearest object can serve as appropriate receptacle. Cool, that's so unbearably sexy, I need to go give you a handjob right now, Ed says, hooking Mustang's elbow and towing him back the way he came. In the bathroom. The bathroom turns out to not be that door immediately on the right of the hall, though. And on the way, Ed glances back and finds Mustang greener with every second, so he makes an executive decision and veers back out the single door he came through. Pretty much everybody is out in the garden, but on the side here, there's some hedges and things, and everybody's mostly congregated where there's chairs and fountains. So Ed just guides them out of view of the house, to where a tree's made a kind of corner with the garden wall. Mustang ralphs like he learned it from a textbook, one hand braced on the wall, one hand staying his open collar. Bend at the hips, Geronimo. The conversation on the other side of the hedge stops abruptly. The voices aren't from the handful of kids Ed had seen. Those are off yelling on the opposite side of the garden. But they're still too fast and young to be anything but teens, or maybe some of those apprentices. There's a giggle, then some rustling. Mustang starts to straighten up, looking unenthused but resigned to the imminent necessity of climbing the fucking wall or something, to make sure nobody calls the Great Flame Minister War General a pussy for not being able to hold his smokes. So Ed grabs him by the back of the shirt, gives him his least impressed look, and pitches his voice, whiny and bereft as he moans, "Ugh, why did you let me drink so much, Roy?" Mustang's grimace says he knows he owes Ed one, at least. I did try, darling, he says, only a little rough at the edges. You were quite forceful. Well, you should have tried harder, Ed whines, then gulps theatrically and gestures for Mustang to provide an encore. Mustang obliges. There's some murmuring, the bushes rustle again, but this time in the opposite direction. Some giggling and a snatch of, yeah, the one with the, everyone's saying Armstrong went and, filters back, fainter as they move away. Ed lets go of Mustang's shirt. Does this happen every time you smoke? No,
Mustang mutters croakily, the cigarette holder now stuck in his back pocket.
Arugan tobacco. A delicacy.
Huh? Ed says meditatively. I guess if just regular smoke did this, Havoc would be target practice by now.
Quite. A cough. Can you transmute mouthwash?
I don't know. What's in it?
Menthol.
What? Just straight?
Right now, I'd take it cut with horse piss.
Mustang says flatly, making no move to straighten up.
Feel like that'd kind of defeat the purpose,
Ed observes, folding his arms and leaning one shoulder against the tree, safely out of the splash zone.
I don't got any liquid on me, and I'm not gonna fuck around with chirality in some backyard besides. Just wipe your mouth on a leaf and we'll blow this joint. Say I had too much and you couldn't just leave me horking in the bushes to come back in and say bye.
Then a thought strikes. Hey, this wasn't, like, could somebody poison you this way?
Mustang gives a little ha under his breath. I wish.
He doesn't look too concerned about it, but Ed's got to admit that always bringing your own lunchbox or figuring out some kind of taste tester situation would be kind of awkward for Mustang's day to day. And it really wouldn't be hard to pay off some busboy to drop some strychnine in Mustang's soup.
You just gonna take your chances?
Mustang spits twice, genteel as a thoroughbred rejecting an unsatisfactory sugar cube, then gingerly starts to straighten up.
Have you heard of Buddy Czar?
Ed actually pushes off the tree in surprise.
Are you serious?
I told you I had abdominal surgery a few years ago.
Yeah, for keloid removal.
Ed eyeballs Mustang's midsection, as if that'll reveal anything.
Ling has a bad czar, because Jiki Yao might have tossed Ling out on his ear into the desert a decade ago, but now that he's gotten them the dragon throne, she's damn well going to keep it.
Ed hasn't even heard of anyone else. There's different kinds. May's textbook had illustrations of a couple of chains and a cylindroid where every link was inscribed with multiple counter-reactive neutralizing arrays. And the more planes, the more specific ones you get. They sew it directly into the stomach lining, kind of like how Ed's quads are sewn into the muscle belts in his automail. And there it sits and transmutes other people's murder attempts into harmless salts and non-solubles.
How much did that even cost?
Mustang shrugs.
It was a promotion gift.
From who? The Queen of Kion?
Mustang uneagerly picks a leaf off the nearest bush, examining it all over for bugs or molecular imperfections or whatever.
Extended family.
And they can afford that?
Ed says, just a split second too late, realizing he just called Mustang's relatives poor.
Well, they sure love you, he adds, which doesn't really fix it, but whatever. Mustang already knows he's rude. And you're telling me they aren't gonna care you're apparently postcoding with some random gold digger?
Mustang actually barks a laugh at that, kind of harder than Ed would expect. Like, Ed's funny, but not that funny. Though maybe Mustang's just having that kind of night.
They don't much gossip about my love life,
he says, finally bringing the leaf up and doing a credible job of pretending it's a linen napkin.
For them, it's not entertainment. Besides, you are the one with all the riches in this relationship after all, if the rumors are true.
What, all of them? Ed says sarcastically. Hulkrow absolutely fucking knows, by the way. Came right up and said it.
Mustang looks at him sharply.
He spoke to you.
Yeah, found me and ranted a bit. Nobody else around, at least. But he's fucking pissed.
Mustang's eyes narrow, a more advanced form of the consideration he'd given Gion.
How brave of him.
Ed snorts.
What, you gonna go hurl in his lap?
It's not like he particularly gives a shit about what happens to Hulkrow,
But hiding in the bushes to puke is a pretty good indicator that you're done with a party. Come on, let's get the fuck out of here. I already tried all their little food. We can fucking go. They find a back gate to the garden, Ed quietly transmuting the lock open. And as they leave, he feels pleased with himself, weirdly. Which is not the way he usually feels after he just took care of somebody horfing their guts out. But things feel clearer now. Just because Mustang's not in over his head doesn't mean he doesn't need the occasional life preserver chucked at his face in order to keep up his doggy paddle. Hawkeye had him dead to rights there. And if Mustang's decided Ed can handle having his stupid little feelings twisted into pretzels, it's coming from the same place that gets him results when he's going after shit like Amstrad's entire military-industrial complex. And Ed respects him for that, even if he can't like it. It feels like something lets go inside him, at least a little bit. There's a burn that feels like bitterness, too, but that doesn't matter. It won't matter. This is how things are. This is how Mustang is. And the more he rises to meet the weight of the many, the less he'll be able to accommodate the needs of the few. Like Ling. And if Ed's not going to ditch him, then all that's left is to love in a way that's not going to cut his own hands. Your bullshit is working, by the way, Ed adds as it occurs. The car pulling out onto the inky road leading back to Central. Stars beginning to blink overhead. Helcro thinks you fucking shipped me to Krita. To, I don't know, be your treasonous little middleman? The disjointed commentary suddenly makes sense. Ha! He thinks I'm minting you money. Are you seriously throwing around that much? Does it look like you're embezzling?
They do think I have more funding than I should, Mustang admits. They'd be happier if I was embezzling it. As it is, they can't tell who my backers are. I told you that we began buying debt, yes? People are beginning to notice that certain decision-making parties are starting to decide in ways they haven't before.
And they think it's Krita funding you. Oh my god, you're going to get hanged, Ed says fatalistically. No wonder Halcro thinks you're still doing treason. Then the rest of the thought hits. Where are you getting the funding? Is it Armstrong? What the fuck did you promise her?
Mustang gives a grimly amused little huff. Not Armstrong. Don't worry, she wouldn't fund me when she could just use the money for the same leverage herself. I wouldn't take it in any case. A backer's got a level of control that is never sustainable to the indebted party.
His voice does go amused, though, in a private kind of way. Though, with a deeply sardonic edge that gives Ed a bad feeling about this.
Though maybe I should make it public. It'd certainly lend credence to the theory that I'm chasing the Armstrong inheritance, with the kind of incentive to find alternative funds.
Oh no, Ed says, the bad feeling now no longer little. Mustang, are you fucking backed by the mob?
The end.
Lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder.
Author's notes. Mustang.
Worse. My mom.
The music used in this podfic is Thunder by Imagine Dragons. If you enjoyed this podfic, you could leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the podfic post, which has a link to the text post. Thanks for listening!